We'll hear argument now in the case of Buechmeyer against the United States.
Please, the court. My name is Eric Snapp. I'm sorry.
Mr. Snapp.
Thank you, Your Honor. I represent the petitioner appellant Shane Buechmeyer in this case. This case involves the Armed Career Criminal Act, under which my client was sentenced to 188 months in prison under the enhanced sentencing provisions of the act. Well, that sentence was based on the district court's classification of my client as an armed career criminal, which was based in turn on the district court's conclusion that he had three qualifying convictions under the act. This appeal presents two questions for the court. The first is whether Mr. Buechmeyer's trial and appellate counsel were constitutionally ineffective for failing to argue that he was not an armed career criminal under the act. The second issue is whether he was properly classified by the district court as an armed career criminal, and he was not. And I'm going to address that question first.
So you're not challenging the basis of his conviction?
I'm sorry, I don't understand the question, Your Honor.
That he had predicate felony offenses to sustain the felon in possession charge. I know there were two counts here. There was a receiving stolen firearms count in this case, correct?
I don't believe that was part of, I'm sorry. I don't believe that was part of the certificate of appealability that I was directed to address.
Well, how whether the predicate offenses in this case are properly characterized as felonies determines whether he's a felon for the offense of felon in possession, which is a substantive argument that goes to the merits of the offense, and it also controls whether he can be classified as an armed career criminal for purposes of the sentence, right?
That was not addressed in the briefing by either side.
That's why I'm not asking the question.
Right, and I'm not sure. No, we're not challenging that. We're focused on the issue that was raised by Mr. Buechmeyer previously and that the district court decided, which was whether he had had his civil rights restored as to two of his convictions.
Well, as I understand the circumstances of this case, the predicate felonies were burglary, Illinois burglary felonies, right?
Correct.
All convictions that occurred at the same time, but different crimes. Right?
My understanding is that there were two different occasions, but we.
But they involved a series of burglaries because there were.
Correct.
Multiple convictions.
Correct.
What, five or six convictions?
Eight, I believe.
Eight.
Yes.
Okay, eight burglaries. He's convicted of two separate crime sprees, apparently.
Correct.
Okay. And if those crimes cannot be classified as predicate felonies for purposes of the Armed Career Criminal Act, can they be used to sustain his felon in possession count?
Well, I don't want to argue against myself. I mean, we honestly did not address this issue in the briefing. It wasn't part of the briefing below. And if the court would like us to address it, we certainly will. Our briefing focused solely on the issue of whether civil rights were restored, Your Honor.
Well, that goes to both whether the crimes can be used for purposes of the felon in possession count, as well as whether it can be used to enhance the sentence because there's more than three.
Correct.
So the legal question in this case determines whether he's a felon in possession and determines whether he's an armed career criminal.
I understand.
You getting what I'm driving at now?
I think so, but I'm not sure that I have an answer for you,
okay,
unfortunately.
That's fair. Go ahead.
Mr. Buechmeyer received a notice from the state of Illinois that his rights to vote and hold office were restored when he was discharged from parole. And under the act, at the time of sentencing, he had had civil rights restored, which is the test for excluding one of his convictions from consideration under the act. He had had civil rights restored. He had had his rights to vote and hold office, and his conviction shouldn't have been counted. Now, the key here is that the state of Illinois relieved Mr. Buechmeyer, and I'm quoting from the Supreme Court's recent Logan case, the state of Illinois relieved him of some or all of the consequences of his conviction. He was not, to use the Supreme Court's term, simply left alone like the offender in Logan. He received a status-altering dispensation, a token of forgiveness from the government. And therefore, his convictions should not have counted for purposes of the Armed Career Criminal Act.
Well, the firearms disability was not removed.
That is true, and that, Your Honor's question deals with the unless clause of the statute of the Armed Career Criminals Act.
Not exactly. My question deals with what was his legal status under Illinois law.
His legal status under Illinois law was that
he remained a convicted felon.
He remained a convicted felon.
Subject to the state's firearm disability.
That is true, Your Honor.
However, the certificate that he received had nothing to do with that.
Well, I respectfully disagree, Your Honor, because
if he was prosecuted in state court for these crimes, he would stand convicted on the facts, right?
That is true. This court, however, has held in the Gillum case, the court explained that where a criminal defendant is given a formal notice of the restoration of civil rights, the court's inquiry is limited to the contents of that document. And if the document restores the civil rights but does not provide that the defendant may not possess firearms, the underlying conviction cannot count towards sentencing enhancement.
Well, the document isn't the discharge and doesn't have any bearing on the defendant's legal status under Illinois law. The document is just evidence of the discharge, isn't that right?
My understanding, based on the court's decision in Irwin...
No, I'm talking about what is state law. Under state law.
Under state law, Mr. Buckmeyer was still prohibited from possessing a firearm. He was still convicted, but he had his state rights restored. And the certificate
of discharge...
So state
law expressly provides that he remained under a firearms disability.
It does.
Which is the language of the federal statute.
But it says, and I quote from the Irwin case, that if the state sends...
No, quote from the statute. Don't quote from the cases.
You're right. The statute says, if the piece of paper, and I'll quote the statute.
No, the statute doesn't say if the piece of paper. The statute doesn't refer to a piece of paper. The statute doesn't refer to notice. The statute doesn't require notice. That's our gloss.
The statute says that if he receives a discharge... if he receives a restoration of civil rights, and that restoration of civil rights...
Has his civil rights restored. That happens by operation of law in many states, if not most states. The discharge certificate doesn't necessarily accomplish that. It's evidence of that having occurred, but it is not, in many states, required. The restoration of civil rights occurs
Understood,
at the completion
Your Honor.
Of the sentence.
This court has explicitly held that if the state sends a piece of paper restoring civil rights...
That's our gloss on the statute. That's not what the statute says. That's not what state law provides. Is our gloss correct?
Yes.
Why?
Because you said it.
Well,
because
this
court said it.
You've got to do better than
and
that, counsel.
You've got to do
and
better than
Logan
that.
Court.
If that were right, we would never get reversed by the
Understood.
Supreme Court. And I assure
Understood.
You we do.
No such thing as judicial infallibility.
But the Logan Court, the Supreme Court, on December 4th, agreed with this court.
No, the Logan Court
not
has a footnote
this.
Saying they're not going to address this question.
But what the Logan Court did say at page 482 is that when the government relieves an offender of some or all of the consequences of his conviction, it doesn't count. The conviction doesn't count. He receives, in Logan, the defendant received no, and I quote, no status-altering dispensation, no token of forgiveness from the government. Here, Mr. Buckmeyer received a token of forgiveness from the government.
He received a piece of paper.
He did. Just like the defendant in the Dollar case. And the Glazer case, both cases decided by this court, in which the defendant received a piece of paper. It didn't explicitly state that he could not possess firearms. In the Glazer case, there was a statute in Minnesota that prohibited him from possessing firearms. Same situation as in Illinois. But the piece of paper didn't say that he couldn't possess firearms, and therefore the conviction could not count. So this case is very close to the Glazer case.
Does Illinois law require a firearms disability warning at the time of conviction?
I don't know that. I honestly do not know the answer to that question, Your Honor. But I know that in this case, Mr. Buckmeyer received notice from the state that his civil rights that had been taken away were restored,
well,
and there
some.
Was nothing. Some of them, all of them that were taken away.
It wasn't
away
one of those generic notices that was at issue in, I think, the Dollar case, which you mentioned, and some of our other cases that focus on the contents of the notice. It didn't say all of your civil rights are hereby restored.
Right. And going back to Your Honor's point earlier, the statute itself does not say all civil rights restored. It says has had civil rights restored. It doesn't say has had all civil rights restored or has had all civil rights that were taken away restored. It just says has had civil rights restored.
Is your contention that all of them were restored here?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Is it your contention that all of them were restored here?
Prior convictions from 91 and 92 were restored, yes.
All
civil rights were restored. I'm sorry.
All civil rights.
His civil rights.
I'm confused a little bit. I know this may be a little off subject, but where it says all constitutional offices withhold, you can run for, you're eligible to run for constitutional offices. But I think, I'm not sure, but the Illinois Supreme Court, maybe, that it's also municipal offices and others are not restored.
We addressed this in a footnote in our brief, Your Honor, in which we said that the only rights that are removed as a function of the conviction were the rights to hold constitutional offices by statute. Therefore, that's all that could have been restored.
That's for sure. Those are the only ones removed. That's my question, because I know those are the only ones restored.
That's what our research showed, yes, Your Honor, and we quote to the statute in our brief.
Well, this is okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Mr. Snapp. Ms. Murphy.
Good morning. May it please the court and opposing counsel. My name is Madeline Murphy. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney. I'm asking this court to affirm the district court's decision denying Mr. Buckmeyer's Section 2255 petition because the district court correctly found he had not received ineffective assistance of counsel, because the district court correctly found that the particular notice that Mr. Buckmeyer received from the state of Illinois did not mislead him into the false conclusion that he had regained a right to carry firearms. I'd first like to address the court's question concerning the predicate offenses. Under Section 924E1, a conviction counts for the purposes of the Armed Career Criminal Statute if it is a previous conviction, if the defendant has three previous convictions for a violent felony or a drug felony, and that these offenses were committed on occasions different from one another. This defendant actually was convicted of 8 separate prior violent felonies. Those 8 cases were disposed of in 2 separate cases. So he had 8 convictions, but in 2 separate cases. There seems to be a little confusion in the record as to whether he had 8 convictions or 2.
What difference does it make how many cases there were? The statutory question is whether the crimes were committed on occasions separate from one another.
The number of cases really doesn't make a difference, Your Honor. It is the number of convictions, the number of crimes.
I'm confused about why we are here. If you knock out 2 and 6 remain, well, since the underlying question is whether counsel was ineffective for not raising this issue, it's hardly ineffective to fail to complain about 2 convictions if 6 are left and what happens to your client is unaffected.
Judge,
well, I don't see how we could get to ineffective assistance if there are 6 remaining violent felonies.
Judge, if you look at the notice that Mr. Buckmeyer received, it does not specify whether it counted for 1 of these 8 prior convictions, 2, 4, or 8. So assuming for the purposes of argument.
Notice doesn't have to specify. It's the law that specifies, and our decision en banc in United States against Hutspeth.
Judge, for the purposes of the armed career criminal, he did have 8 prior convictions within the meaning of Section 924E1, regardless of how they were disposed of or grouped in the district court. Judge, when we look at the notice that the defendant received from the state of Illinois, we see that he was informed that his right to vote and his right to hold constitutional offices in the state of Illinois were restored, and that he may have the right to restoration of certain other licenses. This language was not sufficient to mislead Mr. Buckmeyer into thinking that all of his rights had been restored and therefore that he was entitled to carry guns. Though technically speaking, since 1984, Illinois has denied any felon the right to carry a firearm. The gist of these lines of cases is whether a defendant is falsely misled into thinking that he can, whether he can or he cannot. And looking at the notice that Mr. Buckmeyer received pursuant to the Seventh Circuit case law, he was not misled. If you look at the cases such as Glazer, Dollar, and Irwin, in every instance, those defendants received a notice which had either the term any rights which had been lost or all rights which had been lost were automatically restored. Even though all of those cases arose after 1984, though I think one or two of them were not Illinois cases, the Seventh Circuit determined that all of those defendants had been misled into thinking, because of the language any or all, that they did retain the right to carry firearms. So in those instances, those defendants were considered to have been, quote unquote, mousetrapped under the case law, falsely led by the notice to think that they could carry firearms. Mr. Buckmeyer's notice differs critically from the notices in those cases in that his notice was very specific about the particular rights that he did receive back, the right to vote and the right to hold offices. So looking at the four corners of the document, he could not have assumed from reading that notice that he was entitled to carry a firearm. So under those circumstances, he does not enjoy any relief under the anti-mousetrapping clause of Section 921A20.
Why should the contents of the notice matter?
The contents of the notice matter because that is where the defendant
Based on the statutory language, why should the contents of the notice matter? Why shouldn't just the operation of state law matter?
Based on the case law in this jurisdiction.
I'm asking for a statutory argument.
Statute, right? The hanging paragraph of 920 paren 20 has four sentences. The second sentence says state law matters. The second sentence says state law controls. The third sentence says that if you get a notice, then unless the notice says the firearms qualification, it doesn't count. The question being asked is whether the third sentence modifies the second sentence or just restates it. If you don't have all four sentences of the hanging paragraph in mind, that won't make any sense, I suppose. But Judge Sykes is asking a question about the actual language of the actual statute.
This is the question that the Supreme Court reserved in Logan in footnote 4, whether the operation of state law triggers the unless clause or whether a notice that the defendant receives triggers it. And they specifically reserved that, didn't decide it. That's the question here, and nobody's answering it.
Judge, it seems that the notice would control rather than the operation of state law. Is in keeping with the Logan decision in this court and...
Forget the Logan decision. We're asking you to discuss the language of the statute.
It seems, Judge, that the language of the statute, in the language of the statute, that it is the notice that the defendant receives that would control.
Let me ask you, the Supreme Court footnote 4 notes a conflict among the circuits.
Yes, Judge.
Do you think the circuits that have taken a position other than the one in the Seventh Circuit have done so against a confession of error by the Department of Justice? That is, what is the construction that the Department of Justice places on this statute? My bet is that the circuits that have gone opposite to the way the Seventh Circuit has gone have done so because of an argument from the Department of Justice. Is the Department of Justice just saying in different circuits whatever comes into its mind? What is the position of the Department of Justice on this question?
Judge, I must confess I don't know what the specific arguments that were made in the cases that follow the Indelicato rule in the First Circuit and other circuits concerning the parsing of this particular sentence, Your Honor.
I think it would help us to know what, first, what the position of the Department of Justice is on this question, and how it's based on the statute. And I also think we really need to know whether any of the issues that are being discussed by the parties in this case have the slightest bearing on Mr. Buckmeyer's sentence, given that he has six other convictions for crimes of violence. So I would invite the parties to file supplemental briefs within 14 days addressing the question whether the six remaining violent felonies don't lead to the same result anyway and make this whole ineffective assistance argument pointless. And second, what the interaction between the second and the third sentences of the hanging paragraph in 18 U.S.C. 920 paren 20 is, and therefore what the Department of Justice's view and Buckmeyer's view is about the right answer to the question reserved in footnote 4 of the Supreme Court's Logan opinion. Okay, I think that will help us on our way.
I will endeavor to address the judge's questions. If there are no other questions from the panel at this moment, I will close my remarks.
Anything further?
Your Honor, I'll do the same.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Snapp, we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment in this case, and the assistance you've been and will be to both your client and the court.